talked about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
Mic check, check.
10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1, and all of the rest of it, including Hillary Clinton.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
Please welcome the owner of Seasons Eatings, Pete Schwede.
Welcome. How are
welcome,
you?
Pete.
We like the name of your store.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, did I pronounce your name correctly?
You sure did. Pete Schwede.
Well, Pete, Terry and I have been looking forward to having you on the show because we know you're the master of all kinds of Christmas goodies. Tell us about them.
Well, there are lots of great treats at this time of year. Zucchini bread, fruitcake. But the thing that I most like to bring out at this time of the year are my balls.
You take your hateful mouth to HR right now.
Taint Wars.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
My God, wake up!
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
This is about vomit, people.
Roll another one.
Is it all right with you if I touch your penis?
Just like the other one.
That's not yogurt.
This one seems to be about to quit.
See, even your testicles are failing.
And I see another hit.
It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine.
Let's shine.
It's our time to shine.
Let's shine.
This is going to suck, man.
Roll.
I've come to this.
Just like the other one.
What the hell have we come to?
This one seems to be about to end.
Come on, Allie, either spit it out or don't.
I don't have another cent.
If they were a mood ring, they'd just be going off like a pinball machine.
It doesn't matter that way.
Just pass it around.
Let's say a little prayer for peace.
Now.
Our core demo is truckers clocking on and hookers clocking off.
Our feature presentation.
It's pretty accurate, I think.
Yeah.
Morning, everybody. Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show.
Morning, baby.
It's Friday and it's the 20th of November.
You going to tell Kevin what a good job he's doing today, Allie?
No.
Speaking of Allie, I'm very impressed that you are here today.
Why?
Well, I saw what Allie was doing last night. I saw she was at her computer perched waiting for the Adele album to become available. So I'm surprised she's just not a bloody, sweaty, teary, crying mess right now.
Oh, not bloody. not so much sweaty, but teary, yes. Yeah, I got the notification. Adele 25 is available right now on my phone.
Right.
I was like, and there it was, just right there. You click on Apple. There it was, just waiting for me.
Is this the first time you've ever purchased an album?
No, I pre-ordered it, so I was super excited, and it felt different.
I just feel like people should avoid those things that trigger pain and emotion in them. That is tough to fight through. Like, you know, a single lady with no love really shouldn't be listed. I know that's a lot of the audience there for Adele, but should not really be at night alone listening to Adele. I just feel like that can lead to some dangerous thoughts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I'm a little bit concerned. I feel like right now is when you need Disney movies. You know, you need Happy right now. You don't need Adele.
Yeah, I will go home right after this and just turn on Hallmark Channel.
Okay,
and just Christmas movies all the time. But last night, I fell down that Adele rabbit hole and texted a lot of exes.
Yeah, you need a palate cleanser.
Oh no.
Kevin just looked at me like, really? No.
Text a lot of X's.
Just be careful. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, space it out. Don't listen to too many songs in a row. Like a song here, you know, wait a few hours and maybe another song. Just don't overdose.
Nope. Whole album twice.
Oh.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're taunting fate.
Yeah.
You are.
So tough. Good.
Speaking of taunting fate, great, great story today. I can't imagine people signed up for this, but more people signed up for this than there was even time to do it. I'm talking about tattoo artist Scott Campbell, one of the most famous in New York. He has done Sting, Robert Downey Jr., Courtney Love, Orlando Bloom, Penelope Cruz. He's the tattoo artist of the stars. He's New York's Kat Von D.
Okay.
Very famous. He did an installation recently at the Milk Gallery in New York called Whole Glory. And I know what you're thinking, Kevin, but it's not that.
Okay.
Although it's close to that. It is a wall with a hole in it. And participants showed up and were selected via lottery as to who got to put their arm through the hole in the wall. And celebrity tattoo artist Scott Campbell would do a tattoo for you for free, but you had no say in what it was.
You don't get to pick what tattoo.
You don't even get to have a conversation about it. And he's on the other side of the wall. He can't even read you and come up with something that he think would be appropriate for your sex and age and type of person that you are.
Was it on the wrist? Where was it? On the arm?
On the forearm. It's a palm-sized tattoo on the forearm.
Wow.
Oh. So it is. It's not a tattoo that you can hide. That's for sure. But so many people showed up that they had to do. You know, they had to draw names to see who got to. He ended up doing 23 of them over the course of a few days. Participants were not allowed to ask for anything in particular, and Scott had no information about them at all.
Hmm.
He just looked at their arm and did it. I almost feel like there's a bit of a palm reading aspect to it. He told the New York Times last week, "I really don't know the person, but I am physically touching them, reacting to them subliminally." He had some ideas ready from designs that he had sketched out ahead of time. He also had torn some pictures from books that he copied. Others he just made up on the spot. The freedom is the most exciting thing to me, so I'm trying not to plan it out too much, he said. Can you imagine?
No.
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 Ever?
Mm-mm.
No. Nope. Why would anyone do that? And if I'm him, I'm doing Donald Trump on every single arm. Giant face on every single arm.
I think it is an exercise in trust. People knew and respected his work, and he is a professional enough to not, you know, draw a penis on their arm. Some people felt totally at ease with the parameters, telling Scott right off the bat that they trusted him completely. They were happy for him to draw whatever he wanted, which even Scott admitted was a pretty big risk. I'm probably as nervous, maybe more nervous than they will be, because I never want to do a tattoo that somebody regrets getting. But I think there's a lot of magic in the exchange, the drawing a card out of a deck dynamic. Anyway, he posted a whole bunch of, or the people who were there posted photos of their tattoos, and they're all different. I mean, sometimes it's just a big close-up of an eye. Other ones are skull and crossbones. There's, you know, just a whole bunch of different kinds that he did. He's a very talented tattoo artist.
Sure.
But it would be a very strange thing. By the way, there's a celebrity aspect to this story, too. He is married to Lake Bell.
Ah.
So he's awesome, right?
Yes.
Obviously. Well, no one's going to get Lake Bell unless they're awesome.
That's true.
He is also best friends with Justin Theroux and was the best man at Justin Theroux's wedding to Jennifer Aniston. They were in New York last week and threw a party to celebrate this exhibit that was going on and invited all of the people who got the random tattoos that Scott Campbell had done for them. So how fun was that? You go and you get a free tattoo, and then you go to a Jennifer Aniston, Justin Theroux party, too. So
I don't know. That's all missing me.
You don't think that would be fun to go have dinner with Jennifer Aniston? You're just a random person off the street. Now you have a celebrity tattoo artist working on you, and you're going to a big-time celebrity party? I think that sounds like a fun night.
All right.
Yeah, we're here.
Okay.
We're here. We're in the galley.
I'm not into it, but,
okay.
You know.
So anyway, there you go. So think about that today, about sticking your arm through a hole and having somebody put a tattoo on you.
I don't trust people in my life that I've known forever. Stick my arm through a hole and just, there's
murder,
a blob.
Right?
Murder.
Right?
Yeah, probably murder.
All right, let's talk about today's Kevin Abicho, shall we?
That's a pretty boring story. I wouldn't tell that to anyone else.
Seth Rogen on the show today, talking about his movie The Night Before. We have, how do you say his name? Being Jerry Leninger or Leninger?
I have not heard it pronounced, so your guess is as good as mine.
He's an astronaut, and his name is Jerry. Mm-hmm. We're going to do Ask an Astronaut.
Also, by the way, we had an astronaut on Monday who was involved in a near space tragedy. Jerry also, he was on the Mir spacecraft when it caught on fire. So that was part of his life.
Is this the best week of your life, having two astronauts?
It's pretty strong.
We also have Holly Holm in the studio today talking about beating Ronda Rousey for the UFC Bantamweight Championship. RJ Bell from Vegas, Movie Beat, and another trip to Las Vegas.
Wow.
All coming up today. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Showbiz Beat next. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. It is 5:53. I know. I'm waiting for Ralph to get his headphones on because this is going to be sweet.
Thank you.
I didn't say anything.
No. Chip was. He was reminding me to play The Moment with the Beanhead yesterday because I think you will enjoy this.
All right.
And now, A Moment with Bean.
I would think that some of those, what's that that show that we like? You know, the one with the guy who... Allie.
That was A Moment with Beam.
Wow.
Right? Yeah.
It went on for a while.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it's that show we like with that guy. Those are the details that he gave out.
But it's the show you like. You know that one.
And by the way, Ralph, in the breakdown afterwards, Allie knew exactly what show I was talking about.
Yeah, that scared me.
And wanted to help, but of course Kevin waved her off, which is the policy of the show. You don't throw a drowning man a rope. And so she just had to sit there and just watch me just flail around on the ground.
Oh, when Bean goes down, he's a drowning man looking for a rope. When Kevin goes down, it's like, you're dumb, sucker, drown, bitch. That's so funny when the bat appeals under your shoe, is it?
You know, we are only a few shows away from counting down our top 10 moments of the year.
Right.
And I think 2015 is my best year yet.
Yeah, you're coming on strong.
I really do. I feel like I'm, I may not be challenging you for the crown yet, Kevin, but at least I'm on the field. I'm on the field with you now, at least.
Ralph, how do you feel? You all right?
Better than yesterday, that's for sure. Not good, but better than yesterday.
All right.
Yeah, we're glad to see you.
It's a bad one. It's a bad one. Hmm. Yesterday was one of those days where you get out of bed and go, nope, that's not going to happen. These legs aren't going to hold for any significant amount of time. You need to lay down again. But
thanks, Obama.
I'm heavily medicated, and I think I'll make it through the show. So,
is it NyQuil, Ralph?
It's DayQuil. DayQuil, Ralph.
Oh, boo.
Come on, Ralph.
I was actually able to procure some DayQuil yesterday, so I'm not quite as loopy as I was the day before.
We enjoyed NyQuil, Ralph.
Well, I'm glad
so
you did.
Much.
Come on.
I don't remember much about Wednesday's show.
It was good.
You were great.
That's what the word on the street is. Let's get to show business news, shall we? Of course, next week, the big Thanksgiving holiday. So in the spirit of season, they have released a list, AOL has, of the top 10 Thanksgiving movies of all time. What's your favorite Thanksgiving movie? You think Thanksgiving.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Got to be number one.
That is number one.
I will accept nothing else. Good.
It is what most people think of when they think of a Thanksgiving holiday film. It really is.
What a great movie.
It's a great film. It's full of heart and laughs and great performances from Steve Martin and John Candy.
Laughter and cry. It's got it all.
Tears.
The arts right there.
It's the arts. It's right there. Second on the list is Home for the Holidays with Holly Hunter and Robert Downey Jr. I believe directed by
that guy from that show we like.
No, the girl who was the object of affection of Reagan's and wannabe assassin, Jodie Foster directed Home for the Holidays. Son of a Woman. I forgot about that. That's a Thanksgiving holiday film as well. Chris O'Donnell and Al Pacino. Head to New York City for the holiday. Grumpy Old Man with Jack Lemmon and Watermouth Owl. Very funny movie. Hannah and Her Sisters is a Thanksgiving film. Movie begins and ends with Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. The New World. That's the OG Thanksgiving movie right there.
Yeah.
That's about Captain John Smith and Pocahontas. Colin Farrell stars in that film, along with Christian Bale. The Ice Storm. Yeah, it's a good time. That's a laugh fest. That Thanksgiving film, but it does feature... The course of Thanksgiving break is the timetable for that film. Pieces of Eight with Katie Holmes. You ever see that? It's a depressing film.
I saw that.
She lives in a tiny New York City apartment with her boyfriend, and even though she's estranged with her family, she decides to invite them over for Thanksgiving dinner, and chaos ensues. The House of Yes, another hilarious film.
Oh, I love that movie.
Mentally unbalanced woman who thinks she's Jackie Kennedy.
I watched that movie. My wife and I watched that movie. It's our tradition every Thanksgiving.
Of course it is.
That's our Thanksgiving tradition. Well, is that movie? It's great.
You got to celebrate mental illness in the Baxter household when it comes to the holidays.
What's the name of it,
Ralph? The House of Yes.
It's such a funny movie. Parker Posey is in it. Tori Spelling is in it. It's
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Don't forget him.
Right?
And number 10 is Charlie Brown. That's good.
What was
it? I'm sorry. We couldn't quite make that one out.
I got a cold. I can't remember. Charlie Brown's Thanksgiving.
Charlie Brown's Thanksgiving? Did you say?
Maybe.
What about
this holiday season?
Right?
Prepare to have the stuffing scared out of you.
Come on.
If lazy ass Eli Roth would get on the stick, we'd have a new number one.
Ew, swimming with sharks. Whatever.
Get to work, Roth.
Said he would.
Mm-hmm. Said he would. Promise, a lot of promises.
Said he would.
A lot of empty freaking promises.
Correct.
Nicolas Cage is a good guy, by all accounts. This is a nice story. A man named Britt Ramsey snuck onto the set of Nicolas Cage's new movie, Dog Eat Dog, that he's currently filming in Cleveland this week. Not to get an autograph, not to pester the star, but to ask for his help because his stepdaughter, a 15-year-old named Alexis, is missing. And Britt Ramsey was trying to use Nick Cage's celebrity status to try to get some attention to his stepdaughter's loss. So Nicolas Cage heard the man out and then agreed to take a photo with the missing persons poster to help out. And that photo has been tweeted all over the internet, thanks to Nick Cage and his participation. So it's kind of cool of him to do, especially since the guy sort of snuck onto the set to get it done.
Wow.
A lot of people would have said, security?
Yeah.
But he actually helped the guy out. So I hope he finds his stepdaughter sometime soon. And is there ever a legitimate time for a star to play the Don't You Know Who I Am card? I found this story polarizing, this next story.
Is there ever a legitimate time?
Now, I'll tell you the story, you tell me.
Okay.
Was she in the wrong, or did she have a legitimate beef?
Is this Who's the Dick?
Kind of, I suppose.
Okay.
Amy Schumer.
Okay.
Goes into her fancy gym here in Los Angeles called Equinox. And she gets to the front desk, and she says, I'm here to work out, but I forgot my membership card. The girl behind the counter said, well, if you don't have a card, you can't go into the gym. Amy Schumer's like, I'm Amy Schumer. I'm pretty much hard to avoid these days. I couldn't be more recognizable. This is me. I forgot my card. I apologize, but I would like to go work out. And the person behind the counter was steadfast and said, no card, no workout. Amy Schumer's like, I am famous. And according to Radar Online, which is a dubious source sometimes, threw a massive fit until she stormed out because she was rejected, despite her pleas to go work out. So she obviously did play the Don't You Know Who I Am card.
Yeah.
However, isn't she kind of right?
Yeah.
If you're at the Equinox and you look up, it's Amy Schumer. You know who Amy Schumer is. Everybody does. If you don't, there's the guy in the back who's folding towels. Bring him out because he can vouch for her. Somebody knows who Amy Schumer is at that facility, right?
Yeah, I would think so. This isn't the same as a normal Don't You Know Who I Am
story.
This
isn't trying to get to the front of a line of a restaurant or trying to get into a club after their capacity or... She just wants to go work out. She's not even asking for much. She's a member at that gym. She just wants to go work out.
Yeah, I think the point of that policy is obviously so they can regulate that only members get into
understand.
The gym.
I understand.
The point. But, and it seems like she has proven that she is Amy Schumer by standing in front of the person.
You'd think she could punch it up on her computer and see Amy Schumer's membership and then say, that's her. Let her in.
Mm.
It's ridiculous.
Perhaps.
How about celebrities flying? Same policy. If they don't have their passport or ID, still get them on if you recognize them.
Well,
or do you not want
a whole different thing?
Going into another country is different than going to a gym. I would.
Or do you not want? Well, it doesn't have to be another country. It could be L.A. to New York. But do you want the person behind the counter to vouch whether or not that's really Abe Vigoda or not?
What?
First of all, Abe's not flying anywhere.
Nope.
It's a hell of a pull.
Exactly. We're talking about
working out
security. We're talking about
just ask him. Just trying to figure out where the my face is, my ID, where we draw that line. And you're saying we draw it somewhere above a gym, somewhere below, taking up flight. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a big picture guy.
You're not.
Yeah, you are.
You're the tiniest of pictures guy.
What if the guy is the star of that show that we like? You know,
the one with the guy.
The guy who's the guy. The one, the show with the guy. Maybe, what if it's him? Then do you let him in?
And now, a moment with Bean.
I would think that some of those, what's that that show that we like? You know, the one with the guy who... Allie.
That was A Moment with Bean.
I'm going to be the coolest 100-year-old you've ever met.
Yeah,
the kids are going to love those conversations.
Yep.
With 100-year-old Bean. There are a lot of those. What about that food, you know? The one that you eat? What's that food that comes in the package? Sit down, old man. Today's celebrity birthdays. Oh,
I feel bad now.
I'm all right.
Okay, good.
My hopes get up just a little bit every time I hear that that drop. But rapper Future's 32 years old as we look at celebrity birthdays. Nadine Velasquez celebrates her 37th birthday. She was the maid on My Name is Earl.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she was.
Davey Havoc of AFI is 40. Joel McHale of the soon-to-be-defunct The Soup. Can you believe The Soup's been up there all these years? 44 years old today. Beastie Boy Michael Diamond, 50 years old today. Ming-Na Wen is 52 years old. We love her over there at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
She's the best.
She was on the ER for many seasons. 52. I don't buy it. Something's going on. There's some sort of secret government experiment going on with that woman.
Voodoo. There's some kind
voodoo.
Of...
Voodoo. Yeah, or voodoo. Yeah,
one right. or the other.
That's better. That's a better chance. It's probably voodoo.
Voodoo is famous for making older people look young,
that's
too.
Right. That's... Forget my government experiment theory. Now I'm totally on the voodoo bandwagon.
Come on, man.
And Vice President Joe Biden, 73 years old today. He will not run. He has said... Smart man, that Joe Biden.
Yeah.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show his beat.
What a huge show it is today. Ask an Astronaut coming up later on today. UFC bantamweight champion Holly Holm will be in studio, and your NFL picks from RJ Bell just after 7, like we do on Friday. Speaking of Friday, Ralph is here. Time for the movie beat.
In a world, someone has been watching. One man who risked everything.
Sorry, I have not seen any of your films.
Without seeing the movies. Ralph Garman's Movie Beat. Welcome to my world.
Interesting batch of movies this weekend. Something for everybody. A lot of good films in the pipeline as well, including a film called Carol, directed by Todd Haynes. This is an interesting story. You know, as screwed up as the world is today, boys and girls, and don't get me wrong, it's very screwed up. We have made some advances socially as a society. For example, in the 1950s, if you were a gay or lesbian, oh boy, that was not a good time for you.
Well, you were in the closet, that's for sure.
The love that dare not speak its name, it was known as. And as difficult as it was for gay men, for lesbian women, it was even more scandalous to be involved in a same-sex relationship. And that's where this movie takes place, 1950s in New York. It's about a department store clerk who dreams of a better life, played by Rooney Mara, who falls for an older married woman. Now, can you imagine if you're married and you're a lesbian and then you have a young girlfriend? Kate Blanchett plays the older woman, Carol, in this film. Here's a scene between Kate and Rooney where Kate's character invites her to dinner and then to her house in the country for a little personal time.
Here's the scene. And your moves.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
I'm starved. Bon appetit. What do you do on Sundays?
Nothing in particular. What do you do?
Oh, nothing lately. Maybe you'd like to come visit me sometime. You're welcome to. At least there's some pretty country around where I live. Would you like to come visit me this Sunday?
Yes.
What a strange girl you are.
Why?
Flung out of space.
You're all going to die tonight.
No, it has nothing
Nobody's
to do with
die. What? How do you know?
But everything.
Did you watch it?
Everything sexual in the 50s was like below the surface. Would you like to come to dinner? Yes. Would you like to go to the country? Oh, yes. And there's nature there. I want to bone you. No one could say it out loud. Also opening this weekend, Secret in Their Eyes, a devastating crime drama, a story of a team of investigators who are suddenly torn apart when they discover that one of their own has one of their own is the victim of violence when one of the investigators' teenage daughters is the murder that they're investigating. Chiwetel Ejiofor, Nicole Kidman, Julia Roberts, Dean Norris all star in this film. Here's a scene where Chiwetel Ejiofor's character of Ray and Jess, his partner, played by Julia Roberts, are collecting evidence at a murder scene, and that's when Ray discovers that the victim is, in fact, Jess's daughter. Devastating. Here's Secret in Their Eyes.
No purse, no ID. Body appears to have been bleached inside and out.
Take notes, fellas. This is evidence collection.
Custodian report. Give us some rope.
He's got a theory. What is it?
It's a cat.
What?
It's a cat. It's a daughter.
Yeah. That's not good
Julie
for
Julie Roberts looks great in this, doesn't she?
Yeah. Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2. The big finale of the franchise comes out this weekend. You know what it's about. You got Katniss there shooting her bows and arrows, and you got PETA. He's all against animal cruelty and stuff. And, don't wear fur. No, eat vegetarian.
That's very different.
Crazy different with his attitudes.
Different PETA.
They're taking down the man.
Very different PETA.
Played by Woody Harrelson?
I thought Donald Sutherland was
Donald Sutherland? Yeah, I've never seen these films. But they're very popular.
You haven't seen any of them?
Nah.
I love them. I saw this. It was great.
Well, there you go. That's all you need. You got Kevin's recommendation. Here's PETA and Katniss. And talking about the good old days.
When they used the venom on me, they would show me pictures of my life. At first, they all blurred together, but now I can sort them out a little. Like the ones that they changed, they have this quality. It's like they're shiny. They've been glossed over.
You should get some rest.
You're still trying to protect me, real or not real?
Real. That's what you and I do. Keep each other alive.
There's not a lot of that kind of talking in those movies, is it?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
Whew. Not representative at all.
Legend. You know how much I've been looking forward to this film? Tom Hardy plays identical twin gangsters Reggie and Ronnie Cray. They ran an organized crime empire in the East End of London during the 1960s. Fascinating true life story about these brutal, hardened criminals. Two brothers, one a homosexual, one a very straight, brutal killer, and together they were the most notorious criminals in British history. The film stars Emily Browning, also Taron Egerton, Colin Morgan, and Chaz Palminteri, who in this scene plays an American gangster who's got a business proposition to make to the Cray brothers.
London is going to be the Las Vegas of Europe. We need someone to front and someone to muscle for us.
No, I mean, look, we can do your security. Like, that's not a problem, you know, but we don't want to work for you. I mean, we'd much rather that we work with you.
And Mr. Lancey is open to discussions of this nature. He sends this as a goodwill gesture. Just a taste. For expenses, open it, please. It's $100,000. Could you guys handle that?
Yeah, we can handle it.
Yeah, we can handle it. Love the guys. The Night Before also opens up this weekend. Seth Rogen co-stars along with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Lizzie Kaplan also in this film. Jillian Bell. Story of three lifelong friends who spend the night in New York City on Christmas Eve, as they do each and every year, celebrating and looking for the holy grail of Christmas parties. Chaos ensues. Looks very funny. Here's a scene where Seth Rogen's attending a midnight mass with his wife, who happens to be Catholic. He's Jewish. Unfortunately, the residual of a long night of partying sets in, and he starts to feel unwell there in the middle of the church at midnight. Kevin's laughing because he spent every Christmas Eve his entire life feeling just this way. Here's a scene from The Night Before.
This is so cool.
Shh, whisper.
Are we supposed to participate?
No.
Hallelujah!
Not that kind of church.
No.
Don't throw up. Don't you dare throw up in here. Swallow it like a girl would. Swallow it. Oh, it's your mouth.
Morphak! Where's the Morphak?
Morphak.
We did not kill Jesus! We did not do that!
We did not kill Jesus. He screams.
Standing in the aisle, just
standing in the
puking.
Aisle, just puking.
That was funny.
Hilarious. Great choices this weekend. I'm Ralph Garman, and I walk the movie beat.
All that you know is at an end.
That was Ralph Garman. Ralph Garman. Movie beat.
10 o'clock this morning is the deadline for Miss Double December if you want to get in your application.
Right.
10 o'clock this morning.
You can be Miss Double December 2016. As Kevin mentioned, we are out of time. Today is the last day for you to go to KROQ.com, be 21 or over, fill out some paperwork there online, and upload a couple of photos of yourself, and then just sit back and wait to be called. We're going to have the top 10. What?
I hope Bean's not calling. He's not calling.
No, he doesn't
call him to set everything up.
No, okay. We don't let him around the women.
Why would you even say something like that?
Because you're Uncle Creepy.
Nothing creepy about me at all.
Except your creepiness.
Except for every year at this time, we go, oh, man. Oh, forgot. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Allie, you've known me for a year now. Do I strike you as creepy?
You were creepy the other day with Ashley on the phone.
Boom.
Yeah. And that wasn't even in person.
How dare you?
And there she wasn't even a contestant. She's already got the job for this year. Imagine when he starts working the contestants.
Ooh.
You have no idea, Allie.
Going on.
What you're about to witness at the Miss Double December competition, what you're about to witness, Ashley, what's your name? Allie, will scar you forever.
Yeah. It's rough because he doesn't think he's creepy. That's the part that really hurts.
Right.
The live show is going to be once again on Friday, December 4th at the Slide Bar Rock and Roll Kitchen in downtown Fullerton. That is where we will crown Miss Double December 2016. And just let me say just briefly, again, if you haven't heard, you get to be a part of the Kevin Bean family for a year. You get to come to Acoustic Christmas and Weenie Roast and April Foolishness and singles parties and the breakfast with and all that deal. Just go to KROQ.com for all the details.
What are we doing here? Ralph makes us guess. Is that what we're doing?
Well, along those lines, listener Edwin, our favorite listener, sent in a suggestion. He said, I love the Miss Double December contest, but we need to do something about Uncle Creepy.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Bean. He said, maybe a new game can subtly get the point across regarding Bean saying inappropriate things to the contestants.
Okay.
A new game called Ralph Makes Us Guess. The category, things Bean should not say when talking to Miss Double December contestants. You can have the top 10 answers and then see if everyone can guess what they are. Bonus points to anyone who could identify the ones Bean's actually already said, says Edwin. So I thought that'd be a great game. I've got here the top 10 things Bean should not say but probably will say to the contestants of the Miss Double December competition. And
Ralph Makes Us Guess, yeah. Ooh, ooh. Ralph. Jesus, yes,
yeah. Who gets penis slapped?
Ralph. Is it stud.
Pretty dope, man. Just
wanna tell ya. I am the smartest
human that ever lived.
Now it's over. Ralph. Makes us guess.
Yes. Game. Ralph makes us guess.
It's a strange mix right there.
And I've got the top 10 list of creepy things that Bean is likely to say to Miss Double December contestants, but should not.
All right, let me just clarify. Does that include when they come into the studio, or is this just on the 4th at the live pageant?
Yeah, I think they'll hold. I think they'll hold up any of the conversations Bean has with any of the girls. These are all applicable.
All right, I have a guess.
Kevin, you're the seat of honor, top of the table. Would you like to go first?
He says it every year, and it drives me crazy.
All right, let's see what's on the list.
How old are the girls?
Wow, number six. How old are they?
He says that every year.
Background on their boobs, which is the reason they're in the pageant. That's a legitimate question.
How old are they, Kevin? Is number six on the list. You've got a point. Allie, can you keep track and see?
Yes. I'm going to go with, I'd like to wreck you like the Edmund Fitzgerald.
That's a good one, but did not make the top 10.
We could write that in, though.
That should be a write-in. That was awesome, but unfortunately did not make the list this year.
Do I get to play, or I've never been able to be one of the guest contestants?
Sure, you can play.
May I see them?
May I see them?
Yeah, that does happen every year, too.
Number 10 on the list. Number 10 on the list, may I see them?
May I see them in, that's only number 6 and number 10.
Yeah.
What else would Bean say that's creepy? Well, he always says, what are you wearing? But I don't know if that makes sense in this particular situation.
Are you guessing or are you just thinking out loud?
Both. I'm waiting for somebody to wave me off so I don't make it an official guess. That's my guess, yeah. What are you wearing?
Not on the list. Did not make the top 10 list. I'm sorry.
All right.
Allie?
I want to show you my Cuba feelings.
Did not make the list, but another good write-in. Another good write-in right there.
My turn?
Sure.
Let's motorboat.
Nope. Did not make the list.
Well, now the opposite is happening. Bean is now adding things to his own
new
list.
Creepy things.
All right, perhaps I should step out.
I'm just saying, you're the wrong guy. That's the whole point. And I think Edwin's mistake is that he's making it subtle.
Yeah, that's true.
Subtle does not work.
These were all subtle ones, but Bean's, he's much creepier than real life.
Hurry up, Kevin, because I got another good guess.
Boy, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have any guesses. Allie, do you have any guesses?
Can you say Daddy Likey over and over?
Number one on the list. Number one on the list. Daddy Likey.
Of course.
That's number one on the list. Daddy Likey.
That was going
to
be my guess.
Can we beg you not to say that this year?
Please.
Can we pay you not to say that?
It's not something I planned to say. It's just something that
Is it
happens.
Something that you could plan to not say?
I'll try not to.
Let me give you the rest of the top ten.
Yes,
we're out of time. Would you like to see the gum wall in Seattle? That was that's number nine on the list. Number eight, in my next life, I want to be those panties.
I never would say something like that.
Do you enjoy the company of other ladies? That's something that would be inappropriate. Yeah. This is wildly inappropriate. Number six, look at those.
Just
that exclamation.
We hear that a lot.
You said that a lot. I think in every competition.
That a lot,
but look at those.
That's a legitimate
it
point,
is it,
though.
Because it's it a person, is. Bean.
Look at those.
Right. You're not just looking at those. You're looking at a person.
Look at those.
A person with
For
those
guys. God's sakes. Look at those.
Yep.
Has there been any pillow fighting with the other contestants? That comes up
yeah.
a lot. Do the drapes match the carpets?
Oh, that's been said.
Yep.
Who is your surgeon?
Yes.
Number three on the list.
That's been said as well.
Number two, at what age did you start developing?
Oh.
Yeah, that's number two. And, of course, as we mentioned, number one, Daddy Likey. If we can refrain from any of those during the course of the competition.
It would help.
It would be a blessing.
We cool, Bean?
Ladies, looking forward to meeting you. Top 10 revealed Monday morning on the Kevin and Bean Show at K-Rock.
Ralph. Jesus, yes, yeah. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 6:55.
RJ Bell joins us from Las Vegas, founder of pregame.com, takes a look at the NFL weekend number 11, I want to say, coming up this weekend. That's on the way. Plus, in studio, UFC champion Holly Holm will be joining us next hour as well. That's going to be fun. Ralph is here. Time for the show. He's been on a Friday. Good morning, Ralph.
Good morning, boys and girls. No surprise that a bunch of women who slept with Charlie Sheen before he admitted he was HIV positive have gotten some legal advice about what their next steps should be. And it's no surprise that they've gone to. Who do you think they've got as their lawyer?
Gloria Allred.
Thank you, Kevin, for playing the game.
Because where there are cameras, there is Gloria Allred.
There will be cameras, so she will show up. She will have several of the women under her tutelage as she moves forward. Gloria has confirmed at least two women that she will be representing. I've been contacted by women with reference to Charlie Sheen and their rights. She says, I have no comment on what will happen next. Of course she doesn't, but at least two lawsuits we think will be coming forth. So,
Ralph, we asked Dr. Drew this yesterday. He didn't seem to know off the top of his head, what does the law say regarding notifying sexual partners of HIV status?
I am not a lawyer.
Okay.
But you're a doctor.
I am not a doctor.
What? This whole time?
I'm sorry.
I guess we will find out as the case moves forward then.
I believe these are civil cases, not criminal cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it really matters one way or the other in terms of what the law says in terms of criminal activity.
Gotcha.
But we'll have to wait and see. You know, award season's coming up. Right after Christmas, we start the award season. January through usually April or so is the hottest part of award season. And the biggest one, of course, kicks things off in January on the 23rd, 2016. We'll be having the 2016 AVN Awards show in Las Vegas, Nevada. The Oscars of porn.
Yay!
And the nominees were just released yesterday.
Oh.
Way too many to talk about here, but I just want to hit some of the big ones. Of course, one of the most coveted awards each and every year is Best Anal Sex Scene.
Sure.
Of course. Boy, it's a tight race this year for these nominees. The biggest contender is apparently American Horror Story.
Okay.
That's in the running. Ass Candy, of course.
Sure.
The Booty Movie and Miss Tushy apparently are all still are the front runners for that particular scene. And then, of course, the honor of title of the year, of course, perhaps. I think the most prestigious award they give out at the AVNs.
Sure.
The most coveted. Lot of great nominees this year, including a Bush supporter, which I think is great. Dark Side of Her Moon. I'm pulling for them. Pornado?
Pornado. Why weren't you in Pornado, Ralph?
I have no idea. They're real and they're spectacular. One of the nominees. But I gotta put all my money. If I'm a betting man, I don't know if you can take wagers on the AVNs or not.
I don't know either.
I would have to go with that rat.
What? What is it?
Can't even get it now.
Come on, Ralph.
You gotta say the title so the rest of us can laugh.
What's the movie called, Ralph? What's up for title of the year?
I'm trying. Hold on, give me a second.
His face is so red.
That rapper destroyed my crapper.
Come on.
No.
That rapper destroyed my crapper.
No.
It's nominated for best title of the year.
Wow.
So I'm pulling for that one.
Have you seen porn? How could we not enjoy it?
Right? Today's celebrity birthdays. Speaking of rappers, Future is 32 years old today. Nadine Velasquez is 37 years old. Davey Havoc, singer for AFI, is 40. Joel McHale is 44 years old today. Mike Diamond, member of the B-Boys, 50 years old today. Ming-Na Wen, how much do we love Ming-Na Wen?
So much. Aww,
she's adorable. She's been on the show a bunch of times, and she is just terrific, and she's a talented actress, and she's stunningly beautiful, and she's inexplicably 52 years old today. Or at least that's what she says. She may be undercover. That may just be her cover.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past her.
Yeah.
She's a secret agent and all. And Vice President Joe Biden is 73 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Follow him on Twitter at RJInVegas. The website is pregame.com, which is the exclusive odds provider for the Associated Press. Every Friday morning on the Kevin Beach, we talk to our good friend RJ Bell. Hit it, Steve.
Cause he's RJ Bell. RJ Bell.
Every weekend, I walk around going, because it's RJ.
I know. It's the catchiest theme song in history. RJ, we're going to go easy on you today because we don't want to kick a man when he's down. But what did our listeners have to say about your second consecutive 0-3 week picking games on the Kevin and Bean Show?
You're going to tell me or am I going to tell you?
I'm asking you. What did our listeners say?
I actually thought you had some call-in sound. Nope. I thought this was awesome.
No. I know you hear from them on Twitter. I was just wondering if they were mean to you.
Here's the good thing. You always get – listen, you could go 2-1 and they complain about the winner or the loser. So, right. But the funny thing is because when we were just crazy hot for a long time really because we're still almost 60% from day one, which is amazing – I've been saying, listen, guys, we're going to go 0-6 at some point. So I think some people are listening. You guys maybe aren't.
No, we aren't.
But I actually give the audience credit. And all joking aside, we could go 0-3 this week. I mean, when you make a bet as a professional, as an expert, all you're doing is hoping you're a couple points to the good. So kind of teasing our first play here, the first play we're going to have – is Denver plus one, right? That's our underdog special.
Okay.
My thought is Denver should maybe be laying two, right? And we're getting one. That's it. So the only time the expertise is going to matter is when the game falls in that range. Otherwise, you're going to have blowouts one way, blowouts the other. In the long run, though, you want to win one extra game out of every 20, and that's how you get to 55%. And it's important for people to understand that because they say, oh, Kevin and Bean, that's a big show. RJ's on there. I saw him here or here. You know, he really knows. Yeah, what I know is maybe a point or two or three points. That's it. No one knows more than that. And if anyone tells you they know more than that, they're lying to you.
Who's the quarterback for Denver now?
Who Osweiler.
Osweiler.
He's a tall backup. He was a high draft choice. But really, to kind of segue into that pick – what's happened is there's been a big reaction because Manning's out. If you would have bet this game last week, so you could have actually bet Denver and Chicago last week, is Denver was a 6-point favorite.
Hmm.
Now a 1-point underdog. Well, what's changed? One is Manning's out. But if you actually look at Manning this year, if you look at the rankings of quarterbacks, he was 28th out of 31.
Yeah, he had the roughest year of all almost.
Yeah, it was just crazy. It's all defense. His defense has kept him in all those games, even when he didn't perform, right?
The number one defense in the league, and it's not even close. Denver has a historically good defense. Manning's been well below average. So now you have a backup. Vegas is saying, yeah, maybe downgrade Denver a point, a single point, but that's it. So what's happened is the public knows the name Peyton Manning. Oh, Manning's out. That's big trouble. But the reality is there's been too much of an adjustment in this game. And there's another reason there's been an adjustment, which is Chicago has looked really good. I mean, they had a very impressive win last week. They've exceeded expectations. But they're likely at their high point, and that's what you want to do is you want to find a team that is going upwards, but it's like, can they really go even another step? And I think Chicago's likely reached their high point, and this is a Bears team, a very limited home field advantage. Last 22 games at home, they've only covered 5 of those games. So with our underdog special, we're taking advantage of the overreaction of Manning's absence. Doesn't mean what it used to. Manning isn't what Manning used to be. We're taking advantage of Chicago being at their high point. And if you actually look at it, last 57 games, Denver's only been an underdog. This is the 5th time. And it's against the Chicago Bears. Again, another sign of overreaction. Underdog special of the week, Denver plus one.
Very interesting. All right, Kevin's Arizona Cardinals looked pretty darned good last week. I can't remember who they played, but I think they won, and I was sad.
They played the Seattle Seahawks.
Really?
Because
I think I would remember that, Kevin, if that were the case. Mm-hmm. They are back on Sunday Night Football. Same team 2 weeks in a row on NBC, which you don't see very often. This time they're playing the undefeated Cincinnati Bengals. This looks like a good game, and this is your best bet. How come, RJ?
Yeah, so Bengals were undefeated. And remember, they lost that on Monday night. They looked horrible against Houston. Yeah. So, and I think that's one of the drivers in the game. Arizona is the best bet here. I talk to serious people, professionals that live in houses that don't work straight jobs that think Arizona is the best team in the NFL. And if you look at their yardage differential, which is how many yards do they gain, how many yards do their opponents gain, that's a key stat. Number one in the league is Arizona. They have 2 losses, but in those games they were -6 combined in turnovers. You can't win in the NFL if you turn the ball over. Arizona actually outgained both of the teams that beat them this year. So you could make the case strongly that Arizona has not been outplayed any games this year. And you look at Carson Palmer, number one quarterback in the NFL based upon the rankings. Last 24 starts, he's 20-4 straight up. This team is just plain underrated, and they're really good at home. And when they play a home game against a non-division opponent, an opponent that's not familiar with them because they're out of their division, they've actually won Arizona 12 straight home games against non-division opponents. Cincinnati, non-division opponent. Bengals are a team really good at home. They didn't look it last week, but really good at home. Not so good relatively on the road. So I think home field advantage is huge here. And lastly, and maybe the biggest key, is Cincinnati in primetime games, 4-15 against the spread. And we saw Monday night in primetime, they looked horrible. And remember, Cincinnati with Lewis's coach has been horrible in the playoffs. So what are the 2 kind of highest pressure situations for a team? Primetime and playoffs. Bengals have done horribly in those spots. And very lastly, Carson Palmer, former Bengal. So you've got extreme motivation both for him and his team. Best bet, Arizona, -5.
I can't for the life of me figure out why a team would have so much trouble playing at night. I mean, professional football players who play so many games every year, but they still fall apart in primetime. That is a fascinating statistic about the Bengals, RJ.
Well, if you think about it, though, is do you believe in the pressure gene, right? So we got like Joe Montana, 4-0 in Super Bowls, right, way back in the day. Brady, he's, you know, a pressure player. Some guys not considered clutch. Now, if you talk to a lot of sabermetrics guys, the math guys, they'll say, oh, that's all a lot of BS. But other people who aren't pure math, will say some people excel when the pressure's on and some people do poorly when the pressure's on. History tells us that Cincinnati and Dalton do not do well with the pressure.
All right, you mentioned Tom Brady. Allie, listen up. Your Patriots have the Buffalo Bills. This is the big game from RJ Bell.
Well,
what do you think?
Not really the Patriots. It's going to be their D squad. But that's all right.
And that's the key. Yeah. That, it's almost like we rehearsed that. Because here's what's interesting. We're taking the Bills plus 7.5. You've got a shot for that extra half. About half the places now have 7, half have 7.5. Make sure you get the hook, as they say. New England last 2 weeks, 2-0, right? You think that's great. How do you do better? Vegas has downgraded the Patriots the last 2 weeks by 4 points. Ooh. Even though they won both the games. You know why? Injuries. They have finally reached a tipping point. And we talk about sometimes injuries can be overrated, but not when there's cluster injuries. What's a cluster injury? Is multiple injuries at the same position, because now it's not going from the first string to the second string. It's from the first string to maybe someone that you're signing off the street, literally. And with the Patriots on the offensive line, there's cluster injuries, and with their skill position. So you might say, okay, so the players aren't quite as good, but they still got Brady, they still got Gronk. Here's the key, though, is the game plan is going to have to change, because now they're so thin at these skill positions, receiver and running back, that it won't make any sense for Belichick, when he's a favorite by a touchdown or more, to throw the ball a lot. So they're going to be extra conservative, which is really good if you have a big underdog, and that's what we do with the Bills. And number two, the reality is the Patriots do not relatively run the ball as well as they throw the ball. So not only are they going to be more conservative, they're going to be doing something they don't do as well. That's a big, big factor in this game. Bills are motivated. Rex Ryan is motivated for sure. But the public, they just see that big zero in the loss column. That's why this line is still above a touchdown. But we're going to make it our big game pick is Bills plus 7.5.
Isn't it amazing, Kevin, as you listen to RJ, he's so passionate, he's so knowledgeable, and you really believe him until Sunday comes around. And then you go, what the
How
hell?
How dare you?
Right?
You what know something?
Hell?
I, you know,
RJ.
It's hurtful. It's hurtful.
You know, if I believed that you believed it.
We're just poking you with a stick, my friend.
The big game is Bills plus 7.5 versus the Pats. Best bet, Cardinals minus 5 versus the Bengals underdog special. Denver plus 1 versus the Chicago Bears again. Pregame.com is where you want to go. On Twitter, at RJ in Vegas. Hey, listen, have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, RJ.
Thank you, guys.
You think she'll bring the belt in?
I think so.
I don't know. See, it's hard for me to say, because if I won that belt, I would never take it off.
Right. Never take
Ever.
It off, right?
Right.
Like you'd wear it with swimsuits, yep. You'd wear it with shorts.
Go to dinner,
whatever.
Go to church, whatever. I would wear the belt.
We're talking about Holly Holm, UFC 193 bantamweight champion, who's on her way, almost walking in the building right now. We'll have her on in a second. I watched her interview yesterday with Larry King, who is just turned 82, and I swear to God, he tried to pick up the belt and couldn't.
Oh,
wow.
I mean, it looks like a big-ass heavy belt, right? And Larry is a tiny, frail man, but it was hilarious to me to see him try to lift it. You know, I thought he was going to make a show of it.
Did he have any idea who she was?
You know, it's always hard to tell with Larry, because he is a professional. Look it up in the book. I mean, he definitely had legitimate questions. He probably has people who were, you know, giving him the information he needed about the fight and about the fallout from the fight. I mean, it was a good interview. He asked all the right questions, but it was just funny to see him try to lift up that belt. All right. So Saturday night, UFC 193, again, Holly's going to be joining us in just a second. Ronda Rousey undefeated. She's 12-0 in the UFC, and everybody is thinking, well, Holly's just going to be her latest victim. Ronda's just going to chew her up like she has chewed everybody else up. Here's our friend Joe Rogan calling the end of UFC 193 from Melbourne.
Sidekick. Again with that left hand. She's tagging Ronda. Ducking. Wow. This is incredible. Never have we seen this. Beautiful.
Can she
beautiful. Have. She's hurt.
She's in trouble.
She's hurt. Holly looking to finish.
A performance indeed. Champ, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. How are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
We're so grateful that you made time for us before the fight, and here we are after the fight. Is this true, what you told Larry King yesterday, that you still haven't been back home to New Mexico since you arrived in the United States from Australia?
No, I have not. It's been, you know, we got to go through Los Angeles to get home.
Right.
So they said, well, how about let's just go now? You know, there's holidays coming up, and I'm just like, you know what? I can sleep when I'm dead.
But they've named it Holly Holm Month.
Oh, my gosh.
Did
I
you know.
Know
that? That's amazing.
I know. Albuquerque's ecstatic, and that is what I love about my hometown. You know, they're just, they're full of love there. Super supportive.
Is there going to be a parade or anything like that for you when you finally get back there?
That's what they say. I kind of just want to go hang out with people and be normal like before. Because what I love about Albuquerque is that they're just kind of a laid-back group.
I'm not sure that's as much an option for you now.
it's so weird imagining what it looks. We're just fans and we're just spectators looking at it from the outside. I can't even begin to guess what it is you are going through and how much your life has changed as a result of the last week. I mean, you certainly worked hard for it. You put months and months and months of effort into the training and being prepared and being, you know, the right place, right time to accomplish what you did. But I mean, everything is now different for you, and it must be a crazy adjustment in your head, Holly.
It's crazy. It is an adjustment, but it's fun, and I just want to take it in. I figure life's a ride, and I just want to just ride it.
Sure.
You know, it's just wherever it goes, just want to take it.
What is it like mentally? Because you had a career, you've been very successful in that career, but what is it like mentally to hear everyone talk about Ronda like she's not beatable? And to have to think to yourself, I really still think I can do it. Is that difficult?
So I haven't been in MMA as long as a lot of people have, you know, but I think that that's just something mentally that I learned a lot through boxing. Just having to overcome like big moments mentally and really just go out there. You know, there's, which I just learned when we got here that fight was the
second most watched
pay-per-view in UFC history. And that's crazy being that it's such, you know, there's shows like all the time, so a lot of people aren't going to order every single one, so it's crazy that was that highly watched, and then it also was the most watched in person, and a lot of those things can really be overwhelming. You walk in there and it's, you know, I tell everybody that I believe I can do it, and here it is. You know, you kind of have to go in knowing that failure could be there, and you kind of, I don't want to say you have to be okay with failure, but you have to be okay with the fact that it's possible you could fail in front of the world, and it's a lot to handle, but I was just trying to take myself back and say, okay, let's come back down to reality. It's still just me and another girl, and we're still just going to have to do the same thing, whether it's, you know, everybody's watching or not, so just got to keep it focused.
I always wonder how much is false bravado when, like, for instance, Ronda's whole thing is that she has talked from the beginning about how she was going to retire undefeated. And in her mind, she made it seem like the possibility didn't exist that she was going to lose. And I feel like you had a much more realistic base, which is, I think I can beat her. I want to win this fight, but I also have to be prepared for the possibility that she's really good, too. It seems like that was kind of a good way to go into it, I think.
The more I realize that what they're good at, the more I'm prepared to counter it. Every day in the gym, I would think, like, all right, today I really got to be perfect with this because it's going to be hard in the fight if I'm presented with these bad situations. And it's one of those things that actually sometimes people will call me in the morning because they know I won't be by my – it's not like I'm by my phone all day. While I run or spar, everything I do is – I don't have my phone on me,
right.
So I'm constantly just returning phone calls. So a lot of times my phone will blow up in the morning because I don't have practice till 10:30. And people are trying to catch me before I get going for the day. And a lot of times I don't really answer my phone because I'll be driving to practice. And my mind's just on the fight. And it's like, I almost just can't talk to people. I have to just...
Just focus on what you need
what
to focus
we're doing
on
today. Yeah.
How much? I know you were prepared for every eventuality. You knew what all of the skills were that you were going to be up against Saturday night. How much did you practice in the gym for the armbar that you handled as better than anyone has ever handled it in the history of Ronda Rousey fighting?
So I knew I'd be putting time into the armbar defense, but I didn't realize I would put that much time. And You know, I have Greg Jackson. He's like a mastermind, obviously, with the sport. And, but he's also very, very busy with all the fighters. I mean, our coaches are out of town almost every weekend. And so I started working with a friend of mine who I had worked with a couple times. That he's a professor at Gracie Baja. And he is the most patient. I almost have to be like, okay, it's been 2 hours. Like, I think my brain is full. You know? I
can't learn anything else today.
And so he just had so much patience. And I can't tell you the amount of repetitions, which I knew is what I needed. Because the more you do something, the more it's just second nature. And the more that you're just going to do it when it's supposed to happen without having to think about it too much.
I feel like that's what everybody else who got armbarred by Ronda Rousey thought as well.
Yeah.
And
they six of them in a row knew that that's what was going to happen to them when they walked in, but they still couldn't do anything about it, even knowing it was coming, right?
You know, not that I want to just like lay out the blueprint of how we worked on this and the different things, but I really feel like the way that he started from the beginning of my training camp to the end and how he taught me was just, it was perfectly the way to do it.
It seemed perfect in that fight. Yeah. I mean, when she had you and she was going for the armbar, I was like, well, here we go. Like,
yeah. I thought, oh, she's got a second to get out. Oh, and she's out. And there you go.
You were out so quick. I was like, wow, that's crazy good.
You know, I, before this fight, I said I have had all the help. And the best help, and all my coaches have prepared me. If I don't win, it's totally on me. It just, that means I didn't perform because I know that I had every preparation that I needed.
Yeah, you had every single preparation. You knew what to do within a second. I don't know if you've watched the fight back.
I have watched
it. Oh, okay. Well, what shocked me was after the first round, Rhonda's coaches were like, you're doing great. I'm like, what are you watching? Give her some tips, something. But it blew my mind. And I thought right there, oh my God, she's getting out coached on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, I've always said this, and I think everybody's different mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know your fighter. And maybe that's how she performs better if she thinks, you know.
She needs to hear that positive.
Yeah, I don't know. So mm-hmm. I never judge how someone's, because their communication with, and each person and their personality is so different. Mm-hmm. So that's totally something different. For me personally, my coaches know that if I am losing a round, you tell me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right now is not the time to sugarcoat
right,
stuff.
You don't have that information.
Right now it matters. Do not tell me that. You tell me right. what I need to do.
Right.
And there's been times I've even had a close round and I've sat down and I just looked right at my coach and I go, I lost that round, huh? And he goes, it was a close round. And I'm like, he goes, just say we lost it.
Because that's how you think mentally is.
Yeah, just say we did because
okay.
it close enough, he's like, I think you, like.
Close enough scares anybody
right.
to go to the judges, right?
Right. That's, yeah.
You don't want that to happen.
If it's a round right. loss, he'll be like, all right, she counted you in that one. And I'm like, okay.
Wow.
All right.
We have to take a quick break, Holly. I'm so glad you're here. We're so
Thank
happy
you so
to
much.
See you. She is the bantamweight champion of the UFC, winner of UFC 193, 10-0 in the UFC, by the way. And more with the champ, Holly Holm, right after this on K-Rock.
Ladies and gentlemen, referee Herb Dean has called a stop to this contest at 59 seconds of round number two, declaring the winner by knockout.
Beautiful words in the English language are and new. Holly Holm is back in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, speaking of the belt, how does that work with traveling? Are you in charge of putting it in your suitcase and going through security with it and putting it on a plane and
handling
it all the way back?
I'd buy a seat for it. I would buy the seat right next to it just for the belt.
I did bring it. I thought, oh, man, you should have seen when we got here. I was like, can we go to a UPS and ship some of this stuff home? Because by the time we left Australia, it was like we had so much stuff just from, I mean, everything, even your extra, like, Reebok bag that they give you your gear for the week of the fight to wear or whatever. So, you know, I went with one suitcase and then one bag of just, like, my gloves and stuff for working out. So I had just one smaller bag and then one suitcase, and I came home with like four.
Oh my God.
And it's like I'm not bringing these on all, like, where, from L.A. to Vegas to New York. Like, no way. So I shipped him home.
What was going through your mind, Holly, between round one and round two? You saw what a beatdown you put on her. Ronda Rousey lost her first round ever as a UFC fighter. You knew you were on the come. What was going through your head?
You know,
that's a beautiful belt. I'm sorry to interrupt. That's a beautiful belt.
Right. Man, look at that.
It's, sorry.
Wow, it's huge.
Right?
And feel free to put it on.
All right.
You know, I knew that I was kind of feeling her timing.
Mm-hmm.
She still landed a couple of punches that were, and I just thought, okay, I felt that hit. Like, let's not make a habit of that. You know, like, let's be careful. Because any punch getting in a fight, mm-hmm. whether you're dominating or not, I mean, it could have been like that every round. And then in round five, she could armbar me with 10 seconds left and the fight's over. So it doesn't matter how much work you do. The fight can be over any minute on their end or your end. So I also realized, well, it could also be over if I land the right shots. So let's pick the right shots. If I've got our timing, but let's just be careful with it and see what happens.
People who didn't see the fight probably don't realize, but to me, it looked like you dominated the first round. You didn't just knock her out in the second round. You were landing stuff in the first round, and she was unable to. I mean, it just seemed like
no answers, and you knocked her down.
Were you surprised by that? Were you surprised by how often and well you were able to connect with her?
I was not surprised with the shots that were hitting her because I had full faith in what my coach has kind of drew up as a game plan. I didn't think that it would just kind of carry through the whole round. A lot of times when things happen, fighters adjust or change things, or even if they shut down and then are more defensive,
mm-hmm.
maybe they're not winning still, but it's also harder to hit someone. If someone's not trying to punch you, it's easy. It's harder to land shots. The more you punch, the more openings there are.
So that whole first round, you were landing shots. When she came out for the beginning of the second round, were you surprised that there was no adjustment? It didn't seem like. I mean,
you know, I think there was small things that she did try and change, but I think that just all the hours in the gym just helped. You know, at first we did just kind of stand up for a bit, and then I think she said, well, maybe not here. So she, you know, she pushed me into the cage and we did work off the cage for a minute, but I was just able to get off. And then we got tied up for a minute. She kind of went for a hip toss and we both just went straight down. She went for the arm bar. And then in the second round, she went kind of for a hip toss again. And I wound up taking her down just for a second. So I think that there was things that she tried to adjust to. I just think that everything we worked on in our training camp was things that panned out in a fight. So sometimes you do everything in a training camp and a fight doesn't go exactly how you think it will.
Right.
And you have to adjust. And this is just one of those moments where everything just laid out beautifully. And
you certainly were able to, and I was curious how this ended up being the rhythm of the fight. How did you get her to chase you for the whole fight? Like, why did you not have to move toward her? Is that a dumb question?
No. She's...
That's her style.
She's an aggressive fighter, yeah, and everybody
And you knew to. That, and you knew that's what she was going to do.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, it. A lot of people thought, oh, do you think Ronda's going to rush right at you? And I said, well, yeah, I'm going to think that because, well, then if she doesn't, well, okay.
Right.
I'd rather be prepared for
That's
it.
That's worst case scenario, right?
Right. So I think we were just ready for it. And then if it wasn't, okay, we can adjust what we were thinking, you know, along, you know, if it was
how many,
different.
But. How many times have you landed a head kick that cleanly and perfectly? Is that something that doesn't happen very often except for with, you know, padding and stuff?
I think it just... You know, so I have a couple of head kick knockouts, and that's the head kick that I have. They all actually were set up in different ways. This one was definitely, she was just, you know, standing back up after being
she was dazed.
Knocked down, and so that was a little bit different. And in my mind, I was just thinking, okay, it's here. Just... I didn't want to And you know, sometimes your mind thinks of like a thousand thoughts in a split second.
Mine doesn't, but go ahead.
Okay. Mine doesn't
do.
All the time with those moments, okay?
Okay.
In this moment, I was just thinking, oh, don't kick her till she stands up. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, it was like slow-mo.
Oh, so
like,
you had to be patient while mm-hmm. she stood back up.
Which it wasn't really that. And it was quick.
Yeah,
in
it's still
fight,
a fraction
you know,
of a
like,
second in real life. Yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't want to kick her while her hands were on touching the canvas because
who's then, the points off, right?
Oh, you and it, if I would have kicked her and her hands were touching the mat and knocked her out, then I would just be disqualified, yeah. and now I've just ruined everything.
Yeah.
Wow. So wait.
Yeah. Can I bring you back to before the fight, the weigh-in? When she went at you and started bad-mouthing you, I was like, whoa, wait, what? Everything was so chill up yeah. until then. Do you think at that point, like, I am in her head?
I mean, I just, for a second, I just thought, you know what? Maybe everybody's got to get up for a fight. Everybody mm-hmm. has to get kind of into it. There's a lot of emotion leading up to a fight. It's the most emotional thing you'll ever feel. And so at the time that it happened, I just thought, you know what? Maybe she's just getting into it.
Yeah.
And I didn't really take offense by it.
Mm-hmm.
Just maybe this is how she prepares.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, her little rant after about that I'm fake and all that was very amusing. But like I said, maybe it's just, that's telling you, there's a lot of emotion for a fight. Yeah. So honestly, it just,
you cut her a lot of slack for whatever
yeah.
she was going on in her head. You're very classy like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she's been so respectful. And so like the person that's sticking up for Rhonda the most is sitting in here with us. It's yeah. unbelievable the class and the grace
you are so sweet.
That you've
Thank
exhibited
you.
Throughout this whole thing.
Well, she's been a dominant champion. And
she's been great for your sport.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And okay, this is a huge win for me. Why is it that big? Because she was that accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, right.
Can't
yeah.
one without the other.
All right, let me ask you one more question about the fight, and then we're almost out of time, but we need to talk about what's going to happen next. And my question about the fight is, when you did the kick in the head and she dropped, you didn't know she was out cold, right? That's why you jumped on her and kept hitting her until they stopped the fight? You didn't know how hurt she was when she fell, right?
Right when she hit, I kind of just saw a blink, and you never know when people are going to recover. I've seen people mm-hmm. get dropped and come back and win. So you want to get on.
You got to finish. You got to
make the ref stop you,
right? This is the moment. Yes, you have to wait for the ref to stop you. So that also goes back to my very first MMA fight. So in boxing, you drop someone, you do not touch them.
Mm-mm. Oh, right. Yeah.
You do not. You go to your neutral corner. Mm-hmm. The sooner you get to your neutral corner, the sooner they count, the sooner you can get back on them. So in my first fight, I actually dropped the girl with leg kicks. Not like sweep her off her legs, but I had just been kicking her legs so hard she literally crumbled.
Just
and when she hit the mat, I turned around to go to my quote-unquote
your coach
corner.
Finish her!
And all of my coaches were screaming at me, like veins popping out of their neck. They were like, get on her! And I I turned around and like went, and I literally looked at him and I go, oh, yeah. So I turned around and I went back and the ref was standing over and the girl, she was done anyway. So mm-hmm. they just called it. So it wound up being fine. But, and my entire team was texting me that night. And they were like, that's the first standing eight count I've ever seen in MMA. And I was like, oh my God. So after that, my second fight, I drop a girl and you see me stop and then go. And in my mind, it was like, don't stop.
Yeah.
So now it's like, in my head, it's like, just go.
Yeah.
Just go.
This time is pretty smooth.
Yeah.
This time is pretty smooth.
That's awesome. All right. Listen, we're out of time, Holly.
Thank you for all your time, though.
Of course. Oh, we love you. We're so happy
you
for
you.
It's great to see you again. I know you've been asked a billion times. I know you may not even know the answer, but what do you think will happen in 2016? Do you think Rhonda will be your next fight, or will you fight somebody else before you have a rematch with her?
I think it could be either. And I think it's kind of evenly match on that. Like, I feel like, could I have another fight? Yeah. Could the rematch be the very next fight? Yeah. It could be either.
Do you have a preference?
No, I have never picked what I want. I always just take whatever opportunity in my mind. I feel like I should be ready for anything. And so that is my mentality my entire career. So why change it now? Whatever they say, I'm just gonna
It's working for you, right?
Yep.
Bantamweight champion Holly Holm here on the Kevin Bean Show. Enjoy this so much. Have a great homecoming when you finally do get back to Albuquerque.
Thank you
and
so much.
We will look forward to seeing you again next year. Thanks for coming
in,
Holly.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Holly. Bye.
It's the greatest day of my life, by the way.
No, it's
not. You see who's in the next room? Captain Leininger.
Oh, yeah.
Who's there? U.S. Navy flight surgeon, triathlete, NASA astronaut, going to be joining us for Ask an Astronaut coming up in about 10 minutes. Come on, you guys.
Bean, do you still think there's a chance that you'll be an astronaut? Because I feel
I do.
I feel like you do have that.
Yes, I do. Okay. I may be a little late to get to the program, but I'm still holding that hope. And I think Jerry is going to be my ticket to the stars. So that is coming up here on KROQ. First, though, every day this week we have given away trips for two to Las Vegas, the good one in Nevada. Round trip airfare, hotel, $500 spending cash, courtesy of the new film Creed. In theaters everywhere on November the 25th. This is going to be fun, you guys, because it's been a long time since we played Beat Beer Mug.
It's time to be Beer Mug. It's time to be Beer Mug. It's time to be Beer Mug. Let's beat them to death.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be the Las Vegas edition of Beat Beer Mug. Kevin, the lines are packed with potential contestants. You want to explain how the game is played?
All right, Bean's going to ask a question that will have a numerical answer. Beer Mug will answer first. All you have to do is say higher or lower. That's all you have to do. So you have to tell if he's too high or too low. If you're correct, you go into the drawing. If you're not, we move on.
Okay, that sounds easy enough. And, of course, if the caller is right and does beat Beer Mug, then a whole bunch of us are going to throw things at Beer Mug's head. I think Dave and Chip are both going to be doing
Chip, you have your shoe there. Right?
Yep, my slice of an Etnies.
Okay.
Be.
Right. Does it have to be in my head?
Yes.
Yes.
God, that's hey, look, we don't make the rules.
Right.
How's the game? Who's our first contestant?
We have Rudy in San Juan Capistrano. Hi, Rudy.
Good morning, fellas.
Hi. All right, again, remember, Beer Mug answers first, and then you just say higher or lower, or he hit it right on. The bronze, this is the Las Vegas edition since the trip to Las Vegas. The bronze lion outside the MGM Grand Hotel is the largest bronze sculpture in the country, Beer Mug. How much does it weigh? You have seen it every time you go to Las Vegas, that giant lion outside the MGM Grand. How much does it weigh?
Well, I don't think it's solid all the way through. It's probably a hollow shell. I'm going to go about 1.5 tons.
1.5 tons. Rudy, is the actual answer higher or lower?
I think the actual answer is higher.
Well, I mean, if you consider 50 tons to be higher,
then
yes, it is. Congratulations, Rudy. You're in the drawing. You beat Beer Mug.
All right, you hold on. Let's go to... All right, guys, all right. Let's go
over.
Let's go to Rob in Menifee. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how's it going, Kevin Bean?
Good, thank you.
Going great. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. A study conducted in 2013 showed that 15% of people go to Las Vegas primarily to gamble. But what percentage actually do end up gambling during their visit? Only 15% say they're going there to gamble, but what percent actually gamble during their visit?
Seems like a lot of people are gambling when I'm there.
Yeah.
Like higher.
Right?
But,
right?
I'm going to go. I'm going to say lower because it's going to be, it's one of those answers. I'm going to go 8% of people.
Wait, hold on a second.
Wait.
You say 8% of people who go to Las Vegas gamble?
So people are exaggerating, Bean. That's what he's saying.
All right.
Yeah.
8% of people
gamble. Do you
gamble.
Understand the game?
I understand the game, but the way
you
Bean asked
Las
it.
Las Vegas?
I do, but the way Bean asked it makes it seem like it's going to be lower. I don't know. So that's what I'm
Rob,
going
is the actual answer higher or higher?
Well, I'm going to have to say it's higher.
Higher. Kevin, what do you think the answer is?
I would guess 65%.
Yeah.
Yeah, 71% of people gamble who go to Las Vegas. So you can beat Beer Mug. They are really hitting them, too, by the way.
I don't know. All right, let's keep hitting them. Let's go to Frank in Anaheim. Hey, Frank.
Morning.
Morning.
All right, here's your question, the Las Vegas edition of Beat Beer Mug. You've all seen that giant blue light that shines off the Luxor Pyramid as you get into Las Vegas? How much does it cost for electricity to run that light for a year, Beer Mug? What's the cost to the Luxor to put that light up in the sky for an entire year?
$800 billion.
All right, let's not be crazy.
Okay, let's go $800 million.
You think the electrical bill is $800 million?
That's his not crazy answer. All right, Frank, is the actual answer lower or lower?
Lower.
What is wrong?
wrong with you, Beer Mug? Do you want to get beaten? You're giving these away. It costs $51 an hour to run that thing. $446,760 a year is the electric bill for that light.
That's chump change for them.
All right.
Frank, you you beat Beer Mug. Let's hit it, guys.
Thank you. All right. Let's go to Raul and Downey. Hi there.
Hey, what's up, guys?
All right, here's your question. The shrimp consumption in Las Vegas is higher than the rest of the entire nation combined. Think about that for a second. More shrimp sold and eaten in Las Vegas every day than in the entire rest of the country. How many pounds per day, Beer Mug, of shrimp?
Well, when I go there, I consume half the buffet of shrimp. How many pounds? Let's go.
How does that help you?
Let's go
calculate. The
let's
number.
Go. Let's go. 4 tons of shrimp a day in Vegas are consumed by people.
How many pounds is that? Is that 8,000 pounds?
About 8,000. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, Raul. Higher, or lower?
Yes. I want to say the actual answer is higher.
60,000 pounds per day of shrimp in Las Vegas. 60,000. Congratulations. You also beat Beer Mug.
Wow, everybody so far.
This is great.
Don't hit me in the head. Ow.
Let's do one more, and then we do the drawing for the free trip.
Thank God. The person who's getting hit does not get to make the rules. Let's go to Jason in Anaheim. Hi there.
Hey, morning, guys.
Hi.
All right, final question. In the history of big jackpots in Las Vegas, the largest sum ever in the history of the city was won on the Las Vegas slots at the Excalibur. This was a 25-year-old software engineer from Los Angeles, by the way, who won the largest jackpot in the history of Las Vegas. My question to you, Beer Mug, how big was that jackpot?
I think I remember this. It was a pretty big progressive. I think it was.
Well, that's a good guess.
I think it was. I think it was $300 million. To be honest, $300 million.
He's being honest, Jason.
Is the actual answer?
Ouch! Don't hit me yet.
Higher or lower?
I just figured.
We're gonna go lower.
Yeah, it was $39 million.
Oh,
that's how much it was. So you did also beat Beer Mug. Congratulations,
Beer Mug 0 for 5.
I like it.
Damn it!
I don't know that we've ever seen that kind of failure before, but you can count on Beer Mug.
All right, enough.
All right, Rudy, Rob, Frank, Raul, Jason, all in the drawing. Who wins the free trip to Las Vegas, courtesy of the film Creed, in theaters everywhere November 25th?
The winner is Rudy.
Rudy. Congratulations, Rudy.
What's up, Rudy?
Yay, I finally win something.
Enjoy Las Vegas, and thanks for playing the game.
That was Beat Beer Mug. We found something he's actually good for. But now we can't fire him because we really want to beat him again.
Here my whole thing. People who work on Earth their whole lives are suckers. The only job that matters is being an astronaut. Yeah. That's where it's at, you guys. Am I right, Captain?
It is not bad, I'll tell you that. It is quite an awesome experience to float above the planet and do 500 somersaults in a row and be a world-class gymnast, basically. And yeah, so it's a pretty good job. Can't complain.
Our guest is a retired United States Navy flight surgeon and NASA astronaut, Captain Jerry Lininger, joins us in studio here on the Kevin DeBeach Show. You can also see Jerry Tuesday nights at 10 on Science Channel. Here's part of that show that we told you about earlier in the week. We had Mike Foles on earlier in the week for Secret Space Escapes, which is a new show on Science Channel where they talk about the bad things that sometimes happen in space. You're lucky if you walk away from any kind of accident up there. And yours, Jerry, just to hit it briefly, you were on the Mir space station and what went wrong?
Yeah, we had a huge fire. So a fire three feet in length, just a blowtorch-like intensity, sparks flying off the end of it like 100 sparklers lit at once. Of course, the smoke fills up. I'm an old Navy guy, as you mentioned, and I've done Navy firefighting, but I have never seen smoke spread like it spread on the space station. Within about 30 seconds, couldn't see the five fingers in front of your face.
Wow.
Yeah, so you're on the spacecraft, nowhere to go, you're cut off, you got this huge flame. If the flame points down, you got rapid decompression, quick suffocation. Bad day in space, basically.
I'm sure you're trained not to panic.
Not to panic's the key, and that's one of the big ones.
But are you prepared for what might happen? Did that ever come up in class?
You know, Allie, you sort of are. The big three you have to instantly respond to is fire, rapid decompression, and toxic event. So if you have some toxic chemical, those are the three that you better go on to autopilot, and you better be well-trained. And my old Navy experience on the back of an aircraft carrier on a stormy night trying to land, that's the same sort of thing. You better have that down pat, and you better be very competent. So those big three, we trained very hard, and we're ready for it. And so we were prepared.
nonetheless, you know, again, the blackout surprised me. The intensity of that flame surprised me. And when I put on my first respirator, you know, feeling my way along a bulkhead trying to get to it, it failed. I suck in and I get, you know, the mask just collapsing around my face. And I hit the lever again to the oxygen container and the thing doesn't work. And at that point, I'm already getting fuzzy peripheral vision from needing oxygen. And then I'm feeling my way along a bulkhead trying to
and
get to that next thing.
Are you actively not panicking? I mean, do you have to tell yourself calm?
Exactly right, Kevin. You are literally, I would say my pulse was 60 at that point. And you know, I mean, you got to kind of have the right stuff. And a lot of guys do. But
my
really,
pulse would have been 260.
Yeah. Afterwards, it is. After the fire's out, after you get out of the danger, you go in a quiet corner of that spacecraft. I went in the old airlock and you just let all those emotions out. And then your heart races. Then you sweat. But during it, you say, you know, if I panic, if I don't get methodical, I'm dead. We're going to lose the spacecraft. And probably the main thing you think about, and I think it's the same in combat, you think about your buddies up there. And I'm going to not let this team down. I'm not going to be, in Navy terms, you know, the weak link in the chain.
Right.
Were you the only American on the ship at the time?
I was. It was Russian guys talking only in Russian, Mission Control, Moscow controlling. So, я говорит много по-русски. I talk a
lot
of Russian.
Easy for you to say. Forgive me for not knowing this part of the story, and maybe this is why Secret Space Escapes will be an awesome show to see, because what caused the fire, and it is putting it out much more complicated than we would here on Earth?
It was the Russians, wasn't it?
Yeah. They were scheming. Actually, we had an overlap of crews, and so we actually had a failed primary oxygen generator, and so this thing was a supplemental, kind of looks like a small garbage can, metallic, cylindrical, filled with a slurry of oxygen-rich chemical. Supposed to just, you know, you flick the lever to start it, and it's an exothermic reaction, no flame involved, but somehow it sparked, and then it shot on fire, and so it had fuel, it had built-in big-time oxygen, and we were not going to put it out. So we learned that quickly, grabbed a fire extinguisher, water-based. When you think about it in space, I'm going to live up there for the next 4 months. You cannot be spraying chemicals into the air. I'd be breathing them the rest of the time. Oh, just like, you know, ecosystem on Earth, you know, it's on a smaller scale up there. So water-based fire extinguisher, we were not going to put that intense flame out. So we changed our strategy, hosed down the fire bulkhead, tried to keep secondary fires from starting, exhausted three or four fire extinguishers. One of the things that was different, I had a bear hug and then wedge my legs into the connecting tunnel to the guy shooting the fire extinguisher, because, you know, every action equinox a reaction, and in space you fire a fire extinguisher and you go flying the other direction.
So you're holding him up while he's doing
it. I'm holding him while he's firing, and every once in a while I'd creep up to his face, try to look into his eyes, make sure he's still alive. You know, couldn't see his eyes, too much of a blackout from the smoke, so I would shake him every 30 seconds or so. He would shake me back. We know we're both alive, still on oxygen. About 14 minutes, 4 minutes into that fire, we finally get it out. But even then, you think, okay, sigh of relief, fire's out, but you've got an unbreathable atmosphere now, and all that's keeping you alive is those little respirators. So
14 minutes must seem like 10 hours.
That's a long time in the middle of a raging fire with no place to go and can't see a thing. And it was quite an experience. And this Secret Space Explorers, I'll tell you, I watched a couple of the episodes, 8-part series. It's all first-person accounts. And I'm fascinated listening to the other guys, because some of these stories are things that people kind of kept to themselves. Mm-hmm. Now that the shuttle program, you know, you got to have the right stuff a little bit. And so I think people are reluctant to kind of share some of that in case you were a little fallible at that time, because you might not get the next flight.
Interesting. Right. Yeah,
so shuttle's done. We're done. Able to talk about
now
it a little bit.
Now people can talk about it.
Are you just watching it at all going, wuss? That was nothing.
not really.
Mine was worse.
You know what's funny, though? Even a perfect mission, and Bean, I know you understand this, even a perfect mission, man, you are on the edge of the envelope, and you are just one split second away from disaster. You know, 7 million pounds of thrust, Mach 25, 25 times the speed of sound. During launch, it's just violent, chaotic, shaking around, jostled around. Those solid rocket boosters 2 minutes into it explode off, huge boom, boom. And then you're in a dragster and you just feel that acceleration. Feels like three guys sitting on your chest. And, you know, then those engines cut off and all of a sudden you go from getting crushed in your seat to losing all those people and losing your own body weight. So all of a sudden you're floating, and that, you know, abrupt change is what's incredible in space. And then you're floating a window looking down at planet Earth, looking at the heavens. You know, it's just...
And you're getting that sweet government paycheck.
Yeah. You know, they actually wanted to give me hazardous duty pay when I was up there. They were starting to try to get my Navy hazardous duty pay, and I said, no, you know, there's guys down on Earth deserve that. I'm just doing my job.
They tried to pay you more, and you said no.
Yeah, I did get per diem, though. I got, I think it was 57 cents a day per diem from the Navy, so that's pretty hilarious.
Well, that's worth it. This is the voice of Captain Jerry Lininger here on the Kevin Abid Show. He is a former NASA astronaut. We're going to take a break and come back with calls for Ask an Astronaut. If you're like me and a space geek and there are questions you've always wanted to know about the astronaut program or being in space or being on the space station, call now 1-800-520-1067. And let me ask as we go to break, Captain, is there, when you've had your life and your career in space and you've been millions of miles through space, is it like a professional athlete who longs for those days when he used to play? Is it tough for you to wake up every day and just be on Earth and not go back?
You know, it's tough, but I think surprisingly I don't crave it. I would go to Mars in a heartbeat. Let's put it that way. I try to keep my foot in the door. And by the way, you do have a chance, I think, Bean, because I think they'll take an old guy. I don't know how old you are.
Yeah, but he's got a lot of issues.
All right.
What do you mean? Tell me more. Why do I still have a chance? Are they looking for people to go to Mars?
I think they'll take an old guy, a guy that doesn't mind the risk, a guy that everybody on Earth wants to get rid of.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So,
perfect. See you later,
there
Bean.
There you go. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Captain Jerry Lininger is here on the Kevin Abid Show. The program, by the way, Secret Space Escapes, airs Tuesday nights at 10 on the Science Channel. It is excellent. Your calls as we ask an astronaut next right after this on K-Rock. Actor Seth Rogen joins us in about 20 minutes or so on the Kevin Abid Show from the hit film The Night Before. But screw Seth Rogen, right?
Earthling.
We may bump Seth Rogen. That's
you know
what
what's funny,
you.
Bean? There's an old poster I saw. It's got a picture of an astronaut flying that jetpack out in space. You know, just by himself doing a spacewalk. And it says that the only words it says is, what do presidents, billionaires, and rock stars want to be when they grow up? And that's it. So, you know, I got that picture of the astronaut out in space.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm with you on that. He's all right, but, you know, it's not going into space, man.
The voice you're hearing is a retired NASA astronaut. He is Captain Jerry Lininger, and we are taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067, where you can ask an astronaut. Thank you, bud.
You better not be lame.
All right.
Captain Jerry Lininger's got major space game.
All right. Are we done? We're done.
I believe we're done.
That is awesome. Excellent. Whoever did that, I love it. That would be my wake-up music in space. If I go back up, that'll wake me up one morning. That's awesome.
It won't surprise you that it was mentioned in the theme song, and the very first call that came through to the Kevin Abid Show is Carlos in San Pedro with the most commonly asked space questions. So, Jerry, let's get it out of the way first, and then we can move on to other stuff. All right. Carlos, go ahead.
Hey, brother. I'm on my way to work. La Cienega, I love your show. Hi, Kevin Bean.
Hey, hi.
You know what? My question is, has anybody had sex or got intimate in outer space?
Ah, boy, you're putting me in a rough spot here. I will say we did have a couple go up, two astronauts that were married, and I know there was some quiet time that everyone else went on the flight deck, and I don't know what happened down below. I can tell you, though, it's physiologically very possible. And reproduction in space is something, you know, you got to think about if you're colonizing Mars and things like that. So it's actually kind of a serious question. I was up there with, you know, two
rugged Russian cosmonaut, so there was none of that stuff going on for my 5 months.
But
I'll tell you that.
After like 4 months, you're like, okay, these are my only options, right?
When you get back, the women better watch out. I don't care who they were. It was, you know, nice to see any female when you're back from space after 5 months.
All right, Carlos, thank you for the call. Let's go to Reed. He's in Hermosa Beach. He's on line three. He's got another question that I've often asked, but maybe you've got an answer for him. Jerry, go ahead, Reed.
Hey, what's up, Kevin and Bean?
We're doing Ask an Astronaut.
Awesome. So my question for Jerry is, did you ever see a UFO or something that you just couldn't explain?
You know, everybody listening, do you think I saw a UFO? Put your hand up, unless you're driving. How many say no? How about
I
you
say
two?
No.
What do you think?
I'm
yes
going to
no?
say no.
Well, by UFO,
but
you mean alien
unidentified
craft?
Flying object,
yeah, I mean,
in the true sense of the word.
Oh, I think you saw lots of unidentified flying objects.
And I did.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. So I can say, yes, I did. I saw, and I'll tell you, I saw a white globular thing once, called my crewmates over there, said, what do you think that thing is? Sort of moving. The problem in space is you cannot tell the distance. So just like a star that's very bright and a dim star next to it, the dim star might be way closer, and the bright star could be trillions and trillions of miles further away, but much more powerful.
So that makes it almost impossible to identify what it could be.
It's very impossible. Now, I will say I saw machined sort of things going by, things that were shiny, metallic, tumbling through space, kind of regular motion. But that was, could have been space debris. It could have been a spoon that floated out during a spacewalk that's kind of in the same orbit as we are. Because, again, you can't tell that distance. But I saw stuff, but I never had an alien knock on the door and ask to come in.
Never seen a Martian.
So I never saw the Martian or anything that unusual.
Is that what the government is telling you to tell us?
Yeah, I can only say, actually I'm done with, I'm a retired astronaut, so I can be pretty straightforward. But, yes, I think there's unusual things you see. And I think on a broader question, the probability theory will tell you, is there life out there? Yes, there's life out there. The only thing I can tell you, though, this stuff is trillions of miles apart from us. And so for it to get to us, they would have to be a different kind of animal with a different kind of brain than we have. Because, we're lucky to be able to get to Mars, which is probably like going from Santa Monica to downtown L.A. versus going around the world. I mean, that's the size of differential going to Mars versus coming from another galaxy, for example.
Reed, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. You mentioned that space debris. There's so much up there, so many dead satellites and space trash, like you've said. Why don't any of the ships that ever launch from Earth run into that stuff? It seems like that would be catastrophic if you hit some of that garbage.
It could be, and we're worried about it. Matter of fact, we take the shuttle and we do diversions. We fire the thrusters up there to get in a different orbit because stuff is going at about, 17,000, 18,000 miles an hour, and even if it's the size of a grain of sand, it with that much energy, it's exponential with that velocity, how much energy that generates. And so we do worry about it. We are being very cautious about any space debris. We do our best not to create more space debris. But I have been looking out the window, space station mirror, and all of a sudden I see a solar panel get a big old hole in it, and it probably got hit by a grain of sand going 18,000 miles an hour, and now you have a foot and a half circular jagged edge on a solar panel. So we do get hit. We do track that stuff, and we do maneuvers to miss it.
Let's try Josh in Roland Heights. He's up next. He's on line six. Ask an Astronaut with Captain Jerry Lininger. You're on the air. Go ahead, Josh.
Hi, great captain. Shout out to my sister in Santa Monica. I just want to ask about the overview effect. Basically, the philosophical feeling when you first see the Earth for the first time. Can you explain that to us?
Josh, I wish I could snap my fingers and get everyone on planet Earth up there. we can't do that. It's a huge rocket you got to be in. You got to know what you're doing. But if I could do that for even a minute, I think we'd all change dramatically. And, you'd see that whole Earth. You realize we're all in it together. I'm up with two Russian cosmonauts, Cold War enemies. You get a common goal. You put all the petty differences aside. And I think a lot of our problems on Earth would sort of disappear if we had that perspective that we are all together on our home planet Earth. And we'd probably take care of it a little bit differently also.
A lot of people say that the ecology movement came out of those first NASA photographs of the Earth in space, where people really, for the first time, started to realize we're all just living on this tiny little marble together.
Exactly right.
And we have more in common than we do differences.
Yeah, a spacecraft is essentially a closed ecosystem. We had to make our oxygen, scrub our carbon dioxide. And as I say, during a fire, you got to clear that smoke out. And whatever we put into the air with our fire extinguisher was going to be there for the next 4 months. Planet Earth, when you look down at it from that perspective, you realize same thing, closed ecosystem, whatever we spray into the air, we're going to have to deal with. I think the problem is it kind of diffuses across and you think, okay, it's not my problem, it's someone else's problem. So, you know, I'm a big fan of acting locally. You try to make, for example, L.A. as clean as you can, and it'll sort of take care of itself on a bigger scale. I will say one other thing, if I could. I saw a volcano explode, and I saw ash going for 3,000 miles in one direction, high-level winds taking the steam the other direction for, you know, 1,000 miles. And then I see downwind from a coal power plant in the middle of winter, a very, very, very dot of a, you know, shade on the snow from probably some of that coal burning. And so you got to realize this planet's alive. And when you see that contrast of thousands of miles of soot going into the air from a volcano versus, you know, a coal plant burning, you got to have a little different perspective on that. I'm not saying take care of the local stuff as best you can. But there's a bigger picture. It's a huge dynamic planet, and it's pretty darn good at buffering. And, you know, we're in a world of God's creation, basically, and it works pretty well.
Well, I am devastated that we are already out of time, Captain. I really am so sad. You have a couple of books out if people want to read more about your experiences in space, though, right?
I do. And, you know, the Secret Space Escapes, it is a heck of a program, really well done. And I'm fascinated watching the thing. And so if you want to know more, that's what I do. I'd get on the Science Channel and take a look at it. I've been having fun watching it myself and launched in New York City at Comic-Con. It was awesome. 500 people in costumes having fun watching it. And it's very well done. So that's where I'd go. I'd go watch that show if you want to learn
Secret
a little bit more.
Space Escapes, Tuesday nights at 10 on the Science Channel. All right, there you go. Captain Jerry Lininger, thanks so much for coming in. We enjoyed it.
Fantastic. I did too. Thank you.
By the way, quick reminder, speaking of that new Coldplay song right there, is their show at the Belasco Theater, that K-Rock show that was scheduled for last Friday night, then postponed, is going to be held tomorrow night. So if you want to see Coldplay, if you're not lucky enough to have won tickets from us to go to that show, you can still enjoy the show online at Tidal.com. They are going to be streaming the program tomorrow night starting at 8:30. That should be a lot of fun. Listen to this review, by the way, from the Los Angeles Times. The Night Before, a film we've been looking forward to for months, is finally, this is the big weekend, it's finally coming out. The Night Before is full of impressively committed comic acting led by Seth Rogen, who is surely the Laurence Olivier of playing stoned. Now, if any of our
Say it again.
All right. Yeah. The Night Before is full of impressively committed comic acting led by Seth Rogen, who is surely the Laurence Olivier of playing stoned. That is, look, none of our listeners know who a Laurence Olivier is, but that is a goddamn compliment. The greatest stoner in movie history is what it sounds like to me, who joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Seth, welcome back, sir.
Thank you. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
We're doing great. I don't know what your relationship has been with critics over the years, but what about that? What about you being the Laurence Olivier of stoners?
Sure, why not? I'll take it. Someone has to be, I guess, just by default. So.
Well, it's great to have you back on. This Night Before looks super duper fun. How well did you know Joe Golev and Anthony Mackie before making this movie?
I knew Justin Gordon Levitt very well because we had done this movie 50-50 together a few years ago, and we became good friends. Anthony Mackie I'd actually never met before, and he came in and auditioned for us and is quite an insane person, but is also very funny and talented, and so we put him in the movie.
Is that a difficult role to cast? Did you have friends that wanted to play it, perhaps, and like, I'm not sure that you're right?
Yeah, we knew some people who wanted to play it. It was not the easiest role to cast, but we saw a bunch of people, and Mackie blew us away.
I love the, one of the things that has been a through line running through a lot of your comedies, Seth, is the genuineness of the characters, the sweetness in many cases of the characters, the friendship of the characters. And that's why this movie seems to me like it's hitting the right spot right here at the holidays, because that's when you kind of want to connect with your past, with your childhood friends, with, you know, it just seems like a lot of that sort of thing also gives you an opportunity to build great comedy off of it, too, those real human interactions.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been marketing the movie to be a little more insane than it might be, and I think it actually does have a very, like, human, emotional side of things. And that's very important to us, you know, especially as we get older, I think, a little bit. We like to inject, you know, more of our personal kind of experiences into it. And the movie's really about, like how much harder it is to stay friends with people as you get older. Your own lives kind of start getting in the way. And, yeah, and that's definitely happening.
Tell us about the Nutcracker Ball.
I mean, in the movie, it's just kind of like our goal. It's like the party we've been trying to find for years and years and years. And then at the beginning of the movie, we finally acquire tickets to it. It's kind of like it's our white whale that we're trying to find for the movie, basically.
Now, that's not a real thing, right, Seth?
No, I don't think it is. It might be, but it's not based on anything real.
Okay, but you do have some SantaCon in the movie, and that is a real thing.
Yeah, there's a Santa pub crawl in the movie, which is a real thing, and I have in New York while it's happening, and it's insane.
Explain, please. I've never seen that.
There's just thousands of drunk Santas everywhere, like
just stumbling from one place to the next.
Santas, it's just going to every bar in Manhattan, and it's insane.
Allie, why are you mm-hmming this?
I've done it. I've done it in New
York.
Were
you dressed as Santa?
I was dressed actually as Mrs. Claus.
Okay.
Yeah. I was in charge of kind of keeping everyone in line to which bar was going to next. That lasted for two stops.
Sure.
And then it just got blurry, and it was awesome. Amazing. Yeah.
We are talking to Seth Rogen, actor and producer for The Night Before, big holiday movie that is now in theaters right there. Did you have to film this thing in that big, heavy Hanukkah sweater in the middle of a sweltering New York summer, Seth?
I did. Luckily, my character's on drugs a lot that makes you sweat. And so I think it helped my performance in some way because I had like a constant glaze over my body.
That does not seem like a positive, I got to be honest.
It's so weird.
It made the performance seem more genuine.
I feel like Seth's life is split directly in half. Half the time he's stoned and trying to act like he's not stoned. And then the other half of the time, like when he's making a movie, he's not stoned, but he has to act like he is.
You are not right about that.
Well, the movie looks really, really funny, Seth, and we can't wait to see it. It's called The Night Before. It is in theaters everywhere. Great cast. Joseph Gordon-Levitt in the movie, of course. Anthony Mackie, we mentioned. The beautiful Lizzie Kaplan. Jillian Bell, who's hilarious. Mindy Kaling. Michael Shannon. It goes on and on and on. Miley Cyrus, I'm excited about. Looks like a lot of fun, Seth. Hope you have a great holiday season as well, and we always appreciate you taking a couple of minutes to check in with Kevin and Bean.
Thank you so much.
Ralph is here with our final look at the showbiz beat on a Friday. What's going on?
Before I get to showbiz, I want to apologize to listeners for the way I sound today. Several people have written in, including your listener, Alan, says, Ralph, you sound like hell. Why are you at work? You sound like you should be in bed. Again, it's important to recognize, those of you who don't work here on the Kevin and Bean Show, to take a sick day is to have to bear up under the shame and guilt of Bean Baxter that he lays on you when you try
Why
to take a day off.
Is it always my fault?
It's hardly worth it. It's hardly worth it, is it?
Yeah. It really. I mean, really, it's better to go to work sick than to put up with the shame, the mind game that Bean lays on you when you take a day off for being sick.
Look, I get everyone enjoys a midweek day in Las Vegas. It's fun to get away from the grind a little bit, break up the work. We can go out and have some fun and party. I get that, but just don't say that, and I'll have respect for you. Just don't cloak it in. Oh, I'm sick again.
You really don't believe people get sick, and it's amazing to me.
I think people are mostly faking when they find sick.
Unreal.
Look, people wake up in the morning and they go, you know what?
Wait.
I don't feel 100%, but I also don't want to do my job today, so let's put those two thoughts together and call it sick.
What are you basing your theory that most people don't need it and are not sick? What are you basing that on?
I'm basing it on having lived in the world. And
you don't live in the world.
Humans my whole life.
You don't live with humans.
It doesn't take much for people to call in sick. That's what I'm saying. Even when they are well enough to work, people will often call in sick.
You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
You disagree with that.
I do disagree with that.
I think everyone would.
Ralph took yesterday off.
I was sick on Wednesday, but I came in.
Right.
Thursday,
you didn't
I was...
put the air quotes up on sick, by the way, on Wednesday.
I was really seriously sick yesterday.
You could tell by listening to him he's
like
sick.
Like bedridden sick. I was sick in bed all day yesterday. So I couldn't make it in, so I did call in sick yesterday. Today I didn't feel great, but I felt better than the day before, so I said I'd better just drag my ass in.
Good for you. Thank you, Ralph.
Because I don't want to deal with Bean. And I want to give you an example. Here's what Bean wrote to me yesterday when I wrote the email saying, I'm sorry, guys, I really sorry, but I can't
make it. Oh, can we guess?
In.
Can we guess? Can we guess?
Sure.
Have fun in Vegas.
Nope. Oh. Although that would have been a standard, that's just usually a standard response.
Shoot, I thought I had it.
No, this is what Bean wrote me yesterday. Well played, sir. Masterful setup, razor sharp execution. As if it was all some big conspiracy for me to take a Thursday off. Oh, an exciting Thursday off.
Well, because you set it up so well by coming in Wednesday and saying, oh, I'm really sick, you guys, but I pulled through. I made it in. That was the setup. You made us think that was your end game, but in fact, you were just sucking us in.
Or,
so then, boom, you can turn around and call in sick Thursday.
Or, he's sick.
Eh.
I mean,
seems unlikely.
You can tell he's sick by listening to him.
That's right.
I appreciate you being here, Ralph.
Let's put a bow around this one. What do you say? Get to some show business news?
Yeah.
You know how lucky we are to be on radio?
Versus what?
Versus television or film.
Well, yeah, people can't see us.
That's it.
That's a big positive.
You know how much pressure that takes off of us? It's an enormous relief not to be judged on your appearance at work every day. I ran this fascinating story, and I was stunned. It came out of TheWrap.com, which is a great entertainment news website, by the way. Interesting story. And first-person essay from Reed Ewing. And you may not know the name, but you certainly know him if you watch Modern Family at all. Reed plays the love interest to Sarah Hyland on that show.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Dylan is his name, the character's name. And he's sort of the dim-witted but lovable boyfriend of Sarah Hyland's character on that show. And if you look at that kid, you say, wow, what a great-looking kid. He's got the world by the ass. He's in his 20s, and he's handsome, and he's funny and talented. He wins. Fascinating first-person essay. You should read this at the Wrap if you get a chance, about what he put himself through as a teenager because he felt like he was ugly. Because of the pressure of being an actor in Los Angeles made him feel unattractive. He was moved to Los Angeles in 2008 to become an actor. He said, I had very few, if any, friends. I would sit alone in my apartment and take pictures of myself from every angle, analyzing every feature. After a few years of doing this, one day I decided I had to get cosmetic surgery.
He did that for a couple of years?
Leading up to his first surgery, what happened when he was 19 years old, he decided he had to get cheek implants.
Okay.
Cheekbone implants is what he got. He met with a surgeon, he said, who didn't really tell him what was going to be like. After the procedure was done, the results were horrendous, he said. The lower half of my cheeks were as hollow as a corpse.
Oh.
He had to wear a full face mask for 2 weeks, which he wasn't aware of at the time of the surgery. So he went to Joshua Tree for a couple weeks to get away. And when he got back, he said the results were horrifying. He had to have corrective surgery to correct that surgery. Then, still not happy with his looks, he got a chin implant that he says wound up moving easily across the lower half of my face. It would float down on his chin and go from side to side all over the lower half of his face easily.
Wow.
That started a series of less notable changes to my face. Injectable fillers, fat transfers. None of them last very long or are worth the money, he said. No one had mental health screenings at their place for patients, except for asking if I had a history of depression, which I said I did, and that was that.
So they're like, all right.
But he had a history of eating disorders, obsessive compulsive behavior, both with himself and in his family. None of that ever came up, he said. And so he said now he feels like he's conquered these demons and he's not subjecting himself to these unnecessary surgeries any longer. But he is making a case for more psychological counseling in plastic surgeon's office before you actually get the procedures.
How does he look now?
Can see that.
He looks great. He's a great-looking kid.
I wouldn't think he had anything done.
No, apparently the corrective surgeries have been able to fix whatever went wrong initially. But
wow.
You know, you hear often about women having these problems, but he had similar body dysmorphia, as they call it, and was unhappy with his looks. And there's a lot of pressure on young people, young
beautiful
people.
She ugly. U-G-L-Y. She ain't got no alibi. She ugly.
Not sure if that's helping.
Nope.
If that's helping the case at all.
I like it.
I don't know if it's putting less pressure on people. What Bean was just doing.
And don't call in sick.
Right. Don't take vacation either, by the way.
He gets very angry about vacation that people have.
Let's do that.
Omar.
Omar's on vacation because he has the vacation days to take.
Uh-huh.
No, that's not uh-huh. There's no,
this week and next week, convenient.
Those are days that are due him that he hasn't taken this year. If he doesn't take them, he loses them.
All right, well, if you're willing to accept that, that's
we are, because we know that that's the case. You're a strange one.
Mr. Grinch? Adele's new album, 25, is out today.
Allie, your reviews, please. You've heard it three times now.
Amazing. I will say there are three songs in a row. I think it's track 9, 10, and 11. Good Lord. Just when you think you're getting up from under it, oh.
Good Lord, meaning you're going to start crying?
You will sob.
Emotionally weighty stuff?
Yeah, but she ends it with an upbeat song.
Oh, good.
So that's good.
All right.
But,
well,
wow.
She is still alive, so we know it didn't kill her.
Here's Allie listening to the album now. If you want the album, if you want the album, you're going to have to buy it. New York Times says Adele refused to allow the album to be streamed, so you won't find it on Spotify or Apple Music. This was Adele's decision. And I guess she's entitled to it. But look, I don't blame her. Mm-mm. Put out a new album, you want people to buy it.
Sure.
That's
well,
the way it
you
works.
Don't make very much money at all on streaming. Even if you're streaming a lot, it's right. Pennies on the dollar compared to selling.
By the way, Adele will be on Saturday Night Live tomorrow night. She's the musical guest. I think Matthew McConaughey is the host. Fool me once, SNL.
Yep.
Shame on you. Fool me twice. Shame on me.
How are you not going to tune in a couple of weeks, though, when they have Tina Fey and Amy Poehler co-hosting with Bruce Springsteen as their musical guest?
See? That's how they get you.
Yeah,
right?
They sucker you right in.
It is. Mm-hmm. That's the acorn underneath that cardboard box with the stick holding it up with the string attached to it. And I'm a hungry squirrel. I go, oh, that acorn looks juicy. And then I'm in the boom! The box comes down on me. Next thing you know, I'm in some kid's science class.
They're Lucy. You're Charles Brown.
I am Charles Brown. Yes.
Good old Charles.
Charles.
Yes, I am Charles Brown. Kevin, that is
correct. Very highbrow,
yes,
Kevin.
It was.
Where did that come from, Kevin? He's never been called Charles
are,
60 years.
Lucille Van Pelt, and you are Charles Brown.
I have a very formal upbringing, Bean. Yes. You know that.
Little Lord Fauntleroy there telling us about the Peanuts characters.
Wow. Who knew?
No one. All right, let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Future's 32 years old today. Nadine Velasquez, the lovely and talented actress, is 37. Davey Havoc of AFI is 40. Joel McHale, 44 years old today. Mike Diamond of the Bee Boys, he's 50. Joe Biden, our vice president, is 73. And the lovely and talented Ming-Na Wen, who tweeted that she's heard from friends. We're saying nice things about her. And we are. Because she's lovely and she's talented and she's ageless somehow. It's evil.
And she could kick all of our asses.
Yeah,
as well.
She's for real. She's 52 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I'll walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. Don't forget, tickets go on sale today at noon for the K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas 2015. Noon, you need the password. Go to krock.com for that information.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
So what are you doing here today?
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
He's a handsome genius.
I'm audibly brushing off my hands because I feel like I've done enough work on this. Thanks, everyone.
Look, I don't want to be rude, but you said losers should go suck somewhere else.
And I care, too. And I promise that I will always be there for you. Hold on one second. But right now I got a thing. I'm going to go do this thing. Doesn't mean that I don't care. I'm just going to go do the thing. I will come back later.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Good day, sir.
And here are the monkeys.